Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla-Thompson.
My name's Adam Labaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 69. And we're a couple of weeks out, mate, aren't we? You and I were talking off air before, and it kind of, it's a smell, isn't it? This time of the year,
it's in the air.
It's in the air. It's not the hay fever that you get. It's not the pollen that's in the air that gives you the hay fever. But it's just that kind of, you can just see, it's like that, you've been in that dark tunnel, and you can see the finish line. And it's not a train coming towards you. It's literally the end of that tunnel.
It's becoming a regular thing, Adam. An analogy or a metaphor at the beginning of the
episode. I know.
I kind of like it, though.
As I started going on about it, I thought, I can't top the drumstick from last week, so I'll just leave it there.
I wonder if our listeners will have already picked that up. No, but yeah. You are right. And today, being Thursday the 1st of December, is the first day of summer, Adam, and the first day of December. So, yeah, you do start to taste it a little bit. But we're busy, aren't we?
Very busy, very busy. I know that each year seems to get a little bit busier at this time of the year. I mean, even when you tick off your reports, you kind of have 24 hours to take a breath, and then you're going, well, what else have I got to finish off here? And as we know, a lot of teachers out there may be beginning to find out that they're changing year levels, they're changing classrooms, some may even be changing schools. And that, I don't think people understand what a big deal that is, to get all your stuff and move into another room and reset it all up, you know, get your mind into another curriculum potentially. It's a really big deal.
It is, and I know personally, I'm experiencing all that with the people around me and myself. So it's a challenging time of the year for a lot of people. And you're right. Even when reports are done, there's other jobs to do, which I think we mentioned last week. Mm. Now, Adam, we've got some good news that we thought we'd just mention, being episode 69 and checking our statistics from last week. Obviously, most of you know that we publish our podcast to Podomatic, which is a podcasting platform, and then we send it out to our other platforms. Yeah. It seemed like we had some really a heavy amount of downloads and listens last week, Adam.
We did. Well, we were informed by Podomatic that we were a mover and shaker this week. It's an interesting way of putting it, but our podcast is actually in the top 500 in terms of downloads at the moment, but we were also in the top 25 for movement in a positive direction. So I'm not sure where inside that top 500 we sat, but we actually made quite a big jump over that sort of last week. And it kind of, we're not very self-indulgent. We do like to reflect a lot on our podcast, and we do reflect on how we're going and things. And it was really nice that the support continues to come from not only just our regular listeners, but clearly we're getting some new listeners involved as well. And we wanted to say thank you, because it does take some time out of your day to listen to us. And we just can't thank you enough, really.
Yeah, that's why we brought it up, isn't it? That is the main reason, is that we wanted to thank people. And I know that one of our regular listeners, Brett Lockyer, who we spoke to at the Digicon conference over in WA, recently tweeted with hashtag Bongo Boys. Mm. Brett, if you could add, I think, hashtag Movers and Shakers now to your tweet, that would be great. Thank you, Brett.
I think we're actually going to change the podcast to the Movers and Shakers of Education. I think we might change it to that. But no, we're very happy, and we do want to say a big thank you to our listeners. And we've got three terrific topics, as always, tonight, mate. And as always, we can't wait to get stuck in. So let's go.
Let's go.
So, Rick, first topic for tonight was one I found in The Age a little bit earlier in the week that really got me thinking and got me asking a few questions about education as a whole. And it was a report about the future of work setting kids up for success, that is talking about introducing hard specialist knowledge skills, or as they talk about it, as STEM skills, into kindergarten students. Now, some of these skills they talk about are things like soft people skills, such as critical thinking, communication, collaboration and creativity, to try and set these kids up for jobs in 2030 that may not be around now. So by the time these jobs are there, we've got young adults who are ready to go into them. Now, it got me thinking a lot, mate. It got me thinking a lot about kindergarten students and where we're going with education. And I wanted to throw it to you for the discussion tonight about whether or not it's a good idea or a bad idea. And are we going too young? Is this the beginning of the end of the age of innocence for kindergartners, of just, the finger painting and the working with numbers and doing those things? Are we taking that innocence away and trying to almost make them grow up too early?
Well, that's a good question and a good intro.
Loaded question, I apologise.
No, well done, a really good intro. It mentions that, and the report quotes, and the report was commissioned by the Regional Australia Institute, introducing everything that you just explained there, the STEM skills, into preschoolers curriculum, would be to ensure the success, and I'm quoting here, of today's preschoolers in the 2030 job market, we need to invest in our kids now. And then it says, the future of work is not a question of how do we develop skills to race against technology, but instead what mix of skills provides the greatest opportunity to race ahead with technology. Now, as to your question about whether it's too early and are we losing all that play, I would argue that these kinds of skills will still help increase play in children. Now, it does say in the report that there are going to be some trial preschools in 2018 trialing this program, and it will be based through apps on a device. But it does say that everything they do in these apps will lead them to outside play and outside work. Now, I still think that everything you mentioned there, painting, whatever it is, concrete materials, I believe that would still be a huge part of this learning. Yeah. I think it would be. I actually think that this is a good thing. I don't think it's putting stuff that's too adult with preschoolers.
Yeah.
I think it's preparing kids early, and it would still be targeted at that age group. It wouldn't be something that would be off too hard.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I also want to come back and say, though, is it slightly a panic move? In that we see now that particularly over in Scandinavia, countries like Finland, your Denmarks, Sweden's, things like that, are forging ahead in education and doing wonderful things. And we know that Australia's kind of leveled out a little bit. We're sitting sort of mid-table. We're not really pushing ahead like we should be. Is this kind of a reaction to that? Is this kind of us going, we need to do something, let's bring in these STEM practice ideas, this collaboration, creativity, communication and things to prepare their students for jobs in 2030 that aren't there now. Is it a panic move, or do you think it's just a natural progression?
Well, I don't think it is. I don't think it's a panic move, because I think STEM practices really embed that experimental, and I'm using a couple of words here from the article, experimental and inquisitive behaviour and trial and error. And students at that age, kids at that age, that's what they do. I think that, and it actually mentions that if you look at, it says, one of the people from the report says, if you look at companies like Google or Amazon, they're doing exactly the same things. They are inquisitive, they experiment, everything's trial and error. I think that that's what STEM practices are all about. It is about manipulating, problem solving, working things out. And that is the basis of learning as a child. You've got your own child at the moment. I'm sure a lot of her play is around investigating as she's getting older at the moment.
Absolutely. And we actually really encourage her to do that problem solving. She can't work something, it could be something as simple as something stuck. She's trying to push something that's stuck. Well, come on, you can work it out. You don't just get straight up off the couch and move it. I do want to say that you're making some wonderful points, Rick. And it does remind me of an article I read in the Herald Sun a couple of months ago. And they interviewed two girls. I think one was 20, one might have been 18, who were absolutely ecstatic and happy as Larry to be on the dole. They had no inkling, and it was really, it kind of got me annoyed. They basically were interviewed and said, we don't want a job. Why would I want a job and do all these things when I'm getting paid? We hang around Maccas all day, and then we go on trips out into the country and we do all these things. I think bringing in these STEM practices will help to begin to alleviate that, because we know that there's a lot of kids out there who are just happy to stay at home, earn a small wage, fritter their lives away and have no actual direction. And that may be because they haven't been taught the right skills, the problem-solving skills, resiliency, all those other ones we've spoken about, to actually get out there into the workforce and understand not only how important it is to contribute to society, but that they have a role in doing it as well.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And I mean, obviously, each child's still going to come through with different skills and different beliefs and different things that they're keen about. But I think that's a really good point. I think if students are going to a formal setting like kindergarten and being able to do all this sort of experimental stuff, then surely that is going to help them. And there is a mention about how a lot of primary schools and secondary schools now are still quite formal and almost old school, for want of a better term, with a system that's embedded in textbooks and teaching the curriculum. And you and I still experience that to some degree.
Definitely.
So I guess it would still be a problem, wouldn't it, if you went from a very STEM-based preschool into a very formal setting at a primary school. But I think history is showing that primary schools are maybe getting there a little bit quicker than secondary schools.
I think so.
That's a whole other topic,
yeah,
really.
It is.
But I think that's a great point. I think you're absolutely right that it might, at least if we get in early, it might get those kids thinking about this sort of stuff prior to getting to that stage where maybe they want to be on the dole.
I want to finish with this too. I think the STEM practice, I think you've raised some really good points. And certainly I'm not against the idea. It's kind of getting us to think critically ourselves about the importance of it and things. I think for the STEM practices, particularly those communication, creative thinking, and even going with those link into problem solving, resiliency, you need the parents on board. I think if they're going to be introducing these things, they really need to provide some potential, some training or some feedback or some things for parents that Yeah, they've got to do it at home as well. If their kid's finding something a little bit difficult, they've got the right a little bit of the right language and the confidence to say, well, let's work it out together. Let's go there. They don't sit down and take it away from them and do it for them. And, you know, if as soon as it gets a bit harder, they crack it, well, I'll just do it for you and do those things. But actually understanding the importance of allowing their kids to then go home and implement those skills as well. Because if they're learning it at school but then coming home and it's not being reinforced, it's easy for kind of not to make the impact that we want.
Absolutely. And I think also we have to... we have to reiterate that it's not just about the technology either, and that would be something that would worry parents too, that oh, this kind of program in preschools will increase the screen time.
Yeah,
we have to acknowledge that STEM's not just about technology, it's just a part of it. So
you're right.
Great discussion, Adam.
Yeah.
And I think we'll put the article on the blog and go and have a look, and we'd love to hear what you think about STEM practices being introduced at a very young year level. Okay, Adam, second topic for tonight is actually one that I'm sure a lot of schools are dealing with at the moment, both primary, probably more primary more so than secondary, and that's grade placements. And we did mention it briefly, but most teams at this stage of the year are probably putting together, if they haven't already, the 2017 classes. And so that obviously encompasses a lot of different things. You look at academic abilities, behaviour, friendships. And then the one that is the topic that I want to talk about tonight is parent requests. So a lot of our listeners will, particularly our primary school teachers, will recognise that about some schools will put out the offer, leadership will put out the offer to parents to come in and perhaps make an appointment or send in a letter, putting in a request for a grade placement for their child. Now, normally there's some strict rules under that, Adam, that. And that is things like, it's not normally about learning, isn't it? It's about learning or academics. So, you know, I'd like my child put in a class where perhaps they're going to be challenged because they have these sets of skills. Normally, the parents are encouraged not to say, I want so-and-so, I want Mr. Lavaz, for example, or I want a female teacher or I want a male teacher, even though that can be something that parents want. Now, I just want to put a disclaimer on the start of this that we're certainly not bringing up this topic to pit ourselves against parents.
No, not at all.
But I'm just keen to explore a few points, Adam, and the first one is whether a parent request for a grade placement is valid, or which types of requests are valid and not valid. Now, I've kind of touched on a few there.
Loaded question.
It is a loaded question, because I guess you could argue that all requests are valid for parents because they care about their children.
I think...
But when you're putting grades together, I think there are some that are more valid than others.
Yeah, I don't think parents truly understand how tough it is to make the classes. You know, we're currently in that process now, and it really is... I think there's valid reasons around, you know, I don't think coming in and just going, look, I'd like my student with this one because they play together in the yard. That's not a valid request to me. It's just not. The kids have got to understand, they've got to learn to be able to get along with students. And what you can find is keeping students together a lot, they rely on each other and they continue to rely on each other. And it's not, you know, they don't learn to branch out and get to know other students. They just stay in their little cocoon, so
well,
to speak.
My experience of parent requests over my whole career has been a lot of... Particularly on the negative side, there's a lot of naming of other children. So there's a lot of requests that say, do not put my child with this person. Yeah. And I think you make a really valid point about learning at school is not just about academic. It is about, like you said, it's like when we go to school camp. It's about mixing with other students, learning to... Tolerate's not a great word, but learning, I guess, to manage relationships with other people who aren't necessarily your friends, to get along.
Yeah.
And look, I can understand if there has been some serious teasing or...
Yeah,
you know, hopefully not, but some bullying issues I can kind of see.
Yeah.
But normally I think teachers know this, Adam. And this is the next point I want to make, is that how much is our opinion actually valued? Because we know, obviously, a parent knows that their child the best, but we know our kids really well by the end of the year. And we know who their friends are. We know who they clash with. We know who they learn well with. And I think we can really make informed decisions. And I think there has to be that trust there.
Yeah, I think there does. And I think parents, you know, and I'm thinking from a parent perspective now, and I think to, you know, primary school when my daughter goes there and things like that. I think parents at the end of the day, 90% will just have the best interests of their student at heart. They're not trying to necessarily be a real pain in the neck and things like that. They're just trying to get the best spot for their student. I think what they need to understand though is that sometimes that just can't happen. The way the classes go, look, and you know, It's such a tough one. It really is. There's one I want to come back to as well about the not valid one. The one that I don't like is that student who may need further support, who has an aide or something like that, and the parent may put in a request for them to be with another student because they help them a lot in the classroom. Now, I don't like that one. I don't think a student should be relied upon to help another student all the time and be that one that they lean on all the time. That has to kind of feel like not only do they have a responsibility to their learning, but they take on the responsibility for another student.
Yes.
You know, I think there's those things where those other students should have the freedom to branch out and not have that responsibility. Yep. You know,
I think it's a good point. You know, and I know the one that's come up and one of the final ones we'll talk about, Adam, and I mentioned it in the intro to the topic was male teachers.
Yeah.
Now, you and I both are that, of course. We know that particularly in our state, that there is a lack of male primary teachers still to this day. I've worked with a female colleague, an old female colleague of mine once, though, who said, you know, I feel a little insulted by the fact that there's so many male teacher requests. Mm. Why can't I give the same skills of care, the same academic challenges of a male teacher? Mm. And, you know, I completely agree with her. And
yeah, I do.
I understand some of the reasoning you get behind if a student hasn't had a male teacher. Yeah. I understand some students who come from maybe split families don't have a father figure, but I still don't think that it's up to males to give that. I think both sexes can give that kind of care equally.
I agree, but I also think it's an opportunity for male teachers to be a really good male role model, and I know
I think what
that female teacher said is valid, but at the same time, I've had a lot of parents at different times come and say how important it was for their son or their daughter to see a positive male role model that they haven't got at home, or you know, I know parents or they're like dads that work away a lot, so having that positive, it's almost a little bit father figure like. Is really important. I don't think it's saying that a female teacher can't provide all those right things, but it is. I think what's staring us in the face, what we have to accept is that male teachers and female teachers are different. And that's cliche. That sounds like I'm bringing up an absolute obvious sort of thing, but it is. And I don't know. I'm not arguing necessarily to say it's valid, but I understand where those parents are coming from. It's not a knock on female teachers. They just feel like at this point in time in their child's life, they need a positive male role model, and I don't see that as necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, I can see your point, and I'd actually like to leave it there on that one, Adam, because even though the initial discussion was about parent requests, we'd love to hear your feedback on that topic. What's your experiences with parent requests at your school for grade placements?
Yep.
But also, what are your thoughts on that last part of the discussion about having a male teacher or a female teacher for that point at a certain time in your child's...
Because I think you and I would really like to make the point, I know we want to finish this here, but We know in our schools the wonderful role that not only that male and female teachers do. They provide many of the same things, and of course every teacher has their own idiosyncrasies and their little differences and things, but male and female offer very the same things and they do the exact same job and they all do it well. So I can see where that's coming from as well, and we'd love to hear that feedback. We'd love to hear where you sit on that, and also the parent requests and the placements and things. Have you had some run-ins with parents about that or some problems? As always, we'd love to hear from you. Okay, Rick, final topic for this evening is one that we have touched on very recently, which is looking at, I think, the government and the education system and things are raising the ATAR, I think I say that right, the ATAR score for teachers to get into the teaching course. And
For those people outside, Adam, it's the score that you get from university to...
From the
end of your high school years to get into a teaching course.
So like medicine, for example, is like 98 or something like that. I believe what they're aiming to do over the next couple of years is actually raise it to around about 70 to try and attract the best teachers. Now, this article that we'll put on the blog made a wonderful point that the ATAR doesn't even get close to telling the whole story. And the fact that came up that I just want to bring up straight away is that 25% of teachers who come into the profession do so based on their ATAR, meaning that 75% of teachers who are currently either in university or in the system came to teaching in many other ways. Now, I think that the government looking to raise the ATAR is good intentions, but again, I think misses the mark. And I know there's a few points you wanted to make about that.
Well, yeah, and look, the article was an opinion piece written by the Dean of the Deakin University Faculty of Arts and Education. Look, I won't try and pronounce her surname.
It's quite difficult. You do well to do it.
My apologies there. But look, there's some really important things here, Adam. And look, you talked 75%. That is a lot. Mm. Now, you and I... Both have a friendship group who are all teachers, and all of us came to our university course in lots of different ways. And I'd like to think that our friendship group are all fantastic teachers. Yeah, well, we know absolutely. We are. In fact, we're hoping to have a great example, actually, of something different to this article as a guest on one of our old friends on in our Christmas episode. Yes. So more to come on that later. But I think that's good news that the score is to be raised. I think there is some validity in lifting the score and wanting students coming through who are very strong in literacy and numeracy skills, Adam. But I think it's so, as you said, it's so important that there is a focus on the other attributes and how those things are measured about management, personality, all the other things that you bring to the job. Now, this writer argues that a teacher education program such as the one in Warrnambool, that Deakin, is really struggling at the moment. I had heard this. For getting students into teaching, and that by raising the bar that high will really put off rural students.
I can understand that.
Yeah. What really annoys me, Adam, and this is about the fact that there's a lot of focus on this ATAR. And I agree with what the writer says, is because an approach like this is going to compound what is already a profession which is already turning off a lot of people because it provides short-term contracts.
Yeah.
Now, if you say that, if some students are going to look at that and go, okay, it's really hard to get into teaching now. Mm. Plus, if I get in and I work really hard and I get in, I might only get a 12-month job and I might not get that back. Now, that is a fantastic point that really goes hard against James Molino's, who's the Minister for Education at the moment. Mm. Really goes against it.
Because you almost want to say, well, if you want the best and the brightest, then you need to offer the best and brightest job prospects.
Absolutely.
That's what you need to offer. And I look at some of those people who go through university getting HDs and Ds and, working their backside off and stuff. That doesn't, being able to write an essay and answer some of those does not answer questions about, can you actually get along with kids? Can you actually build relationships with kids? Do you have empathy? Do you have the ability to connect, with the community? Do you have all those things? An ATAR score and being able to get HDs and things like that measures some things, but it doesn't measure all of it. So just focusing on raising the ATAR score misses out on so many other things. And as you mentioned in the beginning, so many people in our friendship group came to teaching in different ways, yet brought a lot of those skills. They didn't need that high ATAR. They already had a lot of these wonderful skills and did those things and have gone on to forge terrific teaching careers.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does make a point that, it's not good enough to say alone that if a student who comes out of year 12 at 17 with a score of 70 or higher is equipped to be a teacher.
Absolutely.
And it goes on to say that usually a lot of students that get, and this is a general statement, but there is stats to back it up, is that there are a lot of students who are on a very, let's say, I get a very high ATAR score, may come, and it does show, from wealthy families and may have attended a privileged school, and they're kind of the ones that might get in.
Mm.
We know that there might be some students who come from less well-endowed backgrounds who are fantastic prospects as well.
Yeah, that's right. So look, we want to throw it out to our listeners about the ATAR score, and I guess how your feelings of validity around it is, do you feel very strongly about it, or do you think they're still missing the mark on what we're looking for in current teachers? We'd love to hear your feedback.
All right, Adam, we've got, hopefully, three episodes to go, including this one. So that means three anecdotes. And tonight, it's your turn.
It is my turn. I want to talk about something I don't think we've ever spoken about before, and it is the school talent show. Now, I don't know if you've been involved in these
across
the years.
Not every year, but I've certainly experienced
it. Our school does one with our school names, Got Talent. And where the kids put in. I just want to talk about.
So it's not Red Faces anymore for those.
No, not Red Faces.
Those people who used to watch Hey Hey on Saturday.
It's sort of the Got Talent. They've kind of updated it for the modern talent show. But I just want to talk about some of the acts that you generally find in a talent show. Now, at no point, I want to make this very clear. At no point, and I'm actually quite serious here. At no point am I looking to make fun of or mock any of the students that get up. It takes tremendous talent and courage for the kids to actually get up and do it. So it's not knocking what they're doing, but it's generally what you find at one of these talent shows.
But sometimes they're rubbish.
Sometimes they are.
Now, I'll play bad cop.
You'll play bad cop. Yeah. Sometimes they are. But you always get the boy pairing doing jokes. out of a joke book, right?
Yeah, yeah.
One. I've had where that they, one. Where they get up and they
and,
just do...
And it keeps going. They don't stop. They have no cutoff either.
No, they don't. And they just keep going until they sort of stop and they look over at the judges in the... We're done now. That's kind of our, that's kind of our thing. And they might have them like little sticky notes on pages, and they've got to flip through, and then they're holding the microphone, and they can't open up the page properly. You got one of those. You always generally have some sort of magic act where the kids want to get there, and it never goes quite right.
It's cards never work. It's the pick a card, any card, and they'll go to the front row.
And they'll
take one, and then it doesn't work. And I always feel for them.
Yeah, me too.
And then they kind of look up and they go, "Can I try it again?" It's like, "Okay, like, try it again."
Or they do the coin in there, and they're flipping the coin around, and they kind of do this thing, and it's clear where the coin has gone.
Yes.
But it's worked, and they feel this sense of achievement.
Sometimes the coin's just gone up into the air and has landed on a table behind them.
Or it's in their hand, so they're sort of celebrating with one closed hand or something like that. You always kind of get the grade 3, 4, 5, 6 girls who practice for weeks and weeks and weeks and dress up and do a dance to the latest song.
Yes.
And it always includes
a bit of
cartwheels, the lifting up or a couple of them get down and someone stands on their backs and everyone goes, oh, particularly the teachers, and then they come down and they're okay.
And depending on the year level, that's always the most stressful one for the teachers because there's always disagreements and fights.
Because there's always
two girls that have been left out. There's two girls who were included at the last minute
and
pulled their weight.
Or some who were in and who just pulled out halfway through. I don't want to borrow this anymore. I want to go off on my own and do my own dance.
Yep.
Do that sort of stuff.
Always a nightmare.
So there's that one. And the last one that there's always, and you might have some more actually, the last one is those, particularly the girls, who are the most courageous of all who get up to sing a song. It's always fantastic. And I just want to give a real shout out to two of my girls who got up and sang a song. One of them who did it without a backing track, who knew all the words and got dressed up just like the singer or something, did the song and stuff. And it was absolutely brilliant. But they're the sort of acts you generally get at a talent show. There's not too much deviation from that, is there?
No, you've hit the nail on the head. Every single one of those in the talent quests that I've experienced over the years.
Yeah.
I'll finish with this. You've asked me if I any experiences.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to talk about my own 11-year-old self back in the year 1990, Adam.
Yeah.
I wrote a song to be performed at the talent quest at Year 5 camp.
Yeah.
I wrote a song, and all the lyrics were about the teachers and the stuff that we do at school, all safe, because I was kind of, you know, a bit of a safe
good kid.
I got three other mates involved, and the chorus, we always went back to the chorus, and the chorus was, the lyrics to the chorus were, spelling folder, look, say, cover, right, check. That was our chorus, and it was to the tune of a huge Australian hit, Telephone Booth by Ian Moss, formerly of Cold Chisel. Why I chose that song, I never know.
I reckon, because one day you would have heard the chorus and put those words and gone, I can do something with that. Yeah. That's generally what happens, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think some of our listeners might be saying, sing it for us. So look, I'll give you the chorus.
Okay, go.
Spelling folder, look, see, cover, I check.
What? That was really good. And I could actually see you singing that and really getting into it too.
We did. And look, we didn't win. And as always, it went to, I think it always goes, the winner always goes to, particularly if teachers are involved, the winner always goes to one that as a child, you don't expect. You think, how did they win?
Sometimes that too, all those ones that just had all the elements. You know, had all the elements. Didn't just dance or didn't just sing.
True.
They had to call it all those elements. I'm glad you brought up one of yours because I wanted to finish on one of mine. It was a year 7 one where we actually had a big group. Do you remember the TV show back in the day, Man Oh Man?
Oh, yes.
Do you remember that one where kind of there was a girl who wanted to pick the man, and if she didn't want that, she'd push him into a pool or something like that?
Yeah.
So we did our own rendition of that. So we had some girls, and there was a whole heap of us boys just lining up there, and we kind of did these poses and stuff. This is year 7, and then the girls had come across and push some out of the thing, and there was lots of arguments between the boys about who was getting pushed out first and who was going to be there towards the end.
13-year-old boys.
Did we rate ourselves? I'll tell you what.
I bet you did. Yeah.
So to our listeners, I'm sure you've been a part of many talent quests across the years, and if you've actually got some other acts that we haven't covered, so we've had the jokes, the magic act, the dance, the singing, all those things, we'd love to hear about it. We'd love to hear about some of the wonderful talent that you've got on show at your schools. So, Rick, that brings an end to episode 69. I know we want to briefly just mention a little bit about our Christmas episode, which will be happening in a fortnight.
Yes, well, if you've got any anecdotes or any stories you'd like to share, particularly around Christmas time, there's always lots going on in schools, please share them with us because we will definitely include them, won't we, Adam?
Yeah, definitely.
And we've also locked in at least two guests, and we're pretty excited about that. One, well, hopefully you'll recognise a past guest of our two regular teachers, and one or two that we won't mention quite yet, but that we're actually pretty excited about.
Yeah,
pretty excited because there's some really interesting things to talk about with them.
Right.
And so over 2 weeks, Adam, until our Christmas episode.
It is. So from me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've both been two regular teachers.